Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Today, we're going to talk about really what we do here on the Inside Scoop, which is try to provide independent sources of information. The name of our show is The Myth of a Free Press, and our guest, Christina Borgeson, is the editor of a new book called Into the Buzzsaw, Leading Journalists Expose the Myth of a Free Press. You may think we have a free press in America where journalists are free to say what they want. And while express censorship by the government is somewhat rare, Christina points out in her book, and a number of leading journalists point out in the book, all the ways in which journalists censor themselves, how they serve the corporate interests of their news organization, how if they don't, they're reprimanded by it, how they do, in effect, cheerleading, providing the public what the news organization thinks the public wants to hear rather than the truth of what they discover. You're going to learn about threats of government action, most particularly by the Federal Communications Commission, headed by Michael Powell, the son of Secretary of State Colin Powell. About media consolidation also restricts journalists, preventing independent news sources like this one, as Rupert Murdoch's Fox empire and the Clear Channel radio empire grows and grows. There are also secret organizations in the government whose job it is to provide propaganda, disinformation. The book talks about requiring journalists to participate in media pools during times of war so they cannot get accurate, independent information, and about the devil's bargain that journalists have to play. If they want good sources, they'll get the sources, but they have to repeat their misinformation. There's a lot in this book, and I want to cover all of these topics as well as your calls with our guest, Christina Borgeson. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free, 877-577-2667. Or, as always, you can make a comment on the blog, and we'll be reading your comments throughout the show. Christina, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
It's good to be with you.
Well, there's so many issues here. I've raised, I think, most of them, but there's so many that you point out in your book. Let's start, I think, with the issue of self-censorship. Do journalists, even those that might want to print something, and even if there's no one above them telling them to print something, do they censor themselves?
Well, yeah, sure, because...
Why?
Well, because, first of all, you know where most journalists who have been in working in a large mainstream organization for a while know where the line is. They are, as they say themselves, institutionalized. And the reason why they do that is because, you know, when you pitch a story that is going to take a lot of time, which means it's going to cost a lot of money, which is going to rile a powerful institution or person, which means you're going to attract lawsuits, or which could possibly unveil malfeasance on the part of your own company's holdings or your own some of your own company's activities or your own company's
or
other
the corporation
holdings.
Controlling the company, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean it's a huge spectrum of it's like a big minefield really for mainstream journalists. But they know like you don't upset the government, big major government institutions.
Why don't we give some examples? I know you provide some. You gave an example of Monsanto, I remember, and some other ones.
Yeah, I mean, Jane Akre, for example, who was working for Fox, she and her husband did an investigative story on Monsanto's bovine growth hormone, which scientists and, certainly Canadian scientists had discovered this, and that you can't even use bovine growth hormone in Canada to make cows produce more milk and faster. But here, it's used, and they did a critical piece on it, which when Monsanto heard that they were going to do it, they called the Fox station in Tampa, and basically what ensued was that the Fox station in Tampa turned around to them and asked them to distort their program up to the point of even falsifying information so that Monsanto wouldn't pursue a lawsuit. And, they ended up losing their jobs. They sued under the Whistleblower Act.
So just so I'm clear, a journalist lost their jobs because they wouldn't lie. They wouldn't lie.
Oh, but it gets even more outrageous.
Okay.
It gets even more outrageous because then they filed under a whistleblower law, which is, you know, that if your boss asks you to do something that's against the law or wrong,
right,
and
they fire you
because you refuse to do it, then you sue under the Whistleblower Act, right?
Right.
Well, they did that, and they won their suit to the tune of about $500,000. Of course, they spent about that much on their lawyers because Fox had an army of lawyers.
Sure.
Fox appeals and wins the appeal on, listen to this, the fact that the Federal Communications Commission, although they say they have regulations against distorting the news, there are no laws against distorting the news. So essentially,
therefore, if you want to fire someone for distorting the news, that's fine, because after all, it's not the job of Fox News to actually give you news.
Well, it's not the job, apparently, the court is trying to say, of any news operation.
To tell the truth.
Not that it's not the job, but any news organization does not have to bring involve the truth with the news that they're presenting to you.
And they don't even have to tell you that it's false. They can just present it as true, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, so then they were on the hook for over $1 million.
Wow.
Actually, over $1.5 million.
Wow.
Okay. And a decision just came down, and again, this thing is constantly evolving, but these people have been involved in this now for years. Their lives have been destroyed. They've been financially destroyed. They've been, emotionally destroyed. And it's still going on. And basically, a judge just now reversed the decision. But Court of Appeals decision, but they're still going to be on the hook for a couple $100,000 to Fox.
Outrageous. I'd like to read an example, if I could, from the introduction to your book.
Okay.
And that is of Christiane Amanpour. And this is a direct quote from you quoting her on CNBC September 10th, 2003. She said, "All of the entire body politic, in my view, whether it's the administration, the intelligence, the journalists, whoever, did not ask enough questions, for instance, about weapons of mass destruction. I mean, it looks like this was disinformation at the highest levels. I think the press was muzzled. I think the press self-muzzled. I'm sorry to say that, but certainly television, and perhaps to a certain extent my station, was intimidated by the administration and its foot soldiers at Fox News. And it did, in fact, put a climate of fear and self-censorship in terms of the broadcast work we did." Now, that's very interesting. But actually, what I found more interesting was the response of the CNN president, Jim Walton, who said, again, quoting from you, "Christiane is a valued member of the team and one of the world's foremost journalists. However, her comments do not reflect the reality of our coverage, and I do not agree with her about this," unquote.
Isn't that fascinating? Because basically what he's saying is that this woman who travels around the world and is their star correspondent and is whom they trust to bring, the news and nothing but the news, represent the most trusted network in news, can't be trusted to evaluate the coverage.
The same coverage that she herself is doing.
I know.
Let me read another example from your book that really struck me, and it's from a broadcast journalist, you put an award-winning broadcast journalist, John Alpert. Instead of me reading it directly, why don't you tell me what his story is? He was traveling outside the media pool, is that right?
What happened was, this was his friend who worked for a major magazine.
Okay. Who didn't want to be identified, that's right.
No, did not want to be identified. And, I mean, he was traveling outside the press pools in the first Gulf War.
Okay.
And to the point where actually some Iraqi soldiers actually surrendered to him. So he was way outside the pool.
Okay.
And then, all of a sudden he got a call from his editor who had been telling him he was doing a fabulous job. All of a sudden he got a message that he had to go back to his hotel room and not leave his hotel room until he joined one of the government pools. And he said he had no idea what was going on. And then he later learned that a congressional liaison from the Pentagon had contacted the media corporation that owned his news magazine, as well as some TV stations and stuff, and said, "Well, that communication bill is going through Congress. If you want that bill to come out in any form that you would find favorable, tell your reporter to go to his hotel room and not come out of that room until he's in a press pool."
Now that, I have to say, I would think that if that came out in public, and again, this is already 13 years old information, that would be quite a scandal. Why is it that these kinds of things, I mean, I have to admit, and I fairly well read, I hadn't heard of Christiane Amanpour's criticism. I'm aware of some of the self-criticism of the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN.
Oh, the mea culpas?
Exactly, the mea culpas. But never anything where like Christiane Amanpour says, this is disinformation. And you have something in your book where Dan Rather spoke to the BBC, but not to CBS, saying that he felt like it was necklacing him, the practice in South Africa where you put a flaming tie around people's neck, that journalists fear that they'll be challenged with the necklace of a lack of patriotism if they challenge the administration. I found it fascinating that he said that to the BBC and not to CBS.
Well, I mean, Dan, if not anything, is a guy with very, very strong survival instincts. You know, that's how he managed to survive as long as he has at Network News. And you can tell, I mean, he's a man of conscience, but he's also a man who loves, you know, his
position. He likes his job, of course. He's got one of the three great news anchors in the country. I understand he wants to keep his job. Frankly, I'm impressed that he said it at all.
Well, I am too, and in the new edition of Buzzsaw, which is coming out in October 1st, he is chapter one, because his interview with the BBC Newsnight's Madeleine Holt will just, I mean, it's breathtaking, because he was very, very honest, and, you know, he basically said, you know, that, he not only talked about the pressures inside the network, but he also talked about the pressures outside. And basically he said, this is what he said, and I'm going to quote it. He said, "It's an obscene comparison, and I'm not sure I like it. But there was a time in South Africa when people would put flaming tires around people's necks if they dissented. And in some ways, the fear is that you'll be necklaced here. You'll have a flaming tire of lack of patriotism put around your neck. Now, it's that fear that keeps journalists from asking the toughest of the tough questions and to continue to bore in on the tough questions so often. And again, I am humbled to say I do not accept myself from this criticism."
I have to say, I remember back in the early 90s when Dan Rather had a particularly tough interview with George H.W. Bush, George Bush Sr., that practically no one talks about today. I actually watched that interview live. I remember when it happened. I remember being shocked and pleased that Dan Rather was actually asking the President of the United States tough questions about Iran-Contra. George Bush Sr. said, "I was out of the loop," and yet document after document after document showed that he was lying, that in fact he was at the meetings, he was in the loop. It was just a bold-faced lie.
Yeah, Bush said that was the worst interview that he ever had in his public life. And basically, too, that is carried over into this administration. They're hostile to Dan, and they don't talk to him.
How has Dan Rather specifically suffered from that interview, which is now 13, 15 years old?
Well, I mean, you know, because of the abuse, in a sense, from their perspective.
Tough questions, in other words.
That he handed out to Bush the father, Bush the son. You know, it's an access situation, and you know that's an important point to make.
Well, let me ask you about that, because you write in your book that some reporters, in order to get access to top administration officials, are willing to basically carry their water for them.
Yes.
Tell us about that. How does that work?
Well, all right. The biggest example of that right now is probably Judith Miller, who, you know, I think triggered the second mea culpa from the New York Times. Judith Miller, who has a very impressive resume, has some expertise in weapons of mass destruction, etc. Her pre-war reporting, all about, you know, how Saddam Hussein had, you know, was imminently going to have imminent capacity for, you know, launching weapons of mass destruction, etc. And she was getting these from so-called secret sources, et cetera, and the secret source, her main secret source, she ended up telling John Burns, who's a very, very distinguished war correspondent over there at the New York Times. She ended up telling him that her main source was, guess who, Ahmed Chalabi.
Well, of course, he was the source for all of our intelligence, it seems. In fact, I'd like to read to you some of the headlines, or read to my, you know them, Christine, I'm really reading them to my listeners,
okay.
that you have quoted here.
Yes.
These are actual headlines in the New York Times. April 21st, 2003, illicit arms kept till eve of war, an Iraqi scientist is said to assert. U.S. says Hussein intensifies quest for A-bomb parts. And Iraqi tells of renovations at sites for chemical and nuclear arms, unquote. Renovations. I wonder if they're getting new wallpaper. I'm not sure. I mean, these are pretty extreme headlines. And you're telling me that at the end of the day, oh, it's just Chalabi giving us misinformation again.
Well, what's interesting, too, is the access, the amazing access that she got, is that the Pentagon allowed her to actually accompany some of their weapons inspectors, and apparently when she to Iraq, and apparently when she got over there, she was actually bigfooting some of the military guys over there, you know, throwing out the names of, you know, because Cheney, you know, she had phone access to Dick Cheney, for example.
Wow.
And you know, she was threatening them with her access to these top level government officials. So, you know,
threatening who? Who is she threatening?
Obviously, they gave her that kind of access, that kind of special access, you don't get unless they know you're going to, you know, provide friendly coverage.
Well, that's frankly part of the concern I have with the White House press corps, that basically the reason they don't ask them Bush tough questions in the rare press conference that happens is because they may not be invited back.
Well, I mean, you saw you saw what happened to poor Helen.
Yes,
Helen
I did.
Thomas, who's like, she's the grand dame.
She's been around since Eisenhower, I think, or Kennedy, a long time.
Oh, since Eisenhower.
Eisenhower, that's what I thought.
Since Eisenhower.
And she,
okay.
Because she can afford to ask tough questions. She feels like, well, she doesn't have much time to be left reporting, maybe. So.
Well, she lost her access because she asked a tough question.
Now, they actually wouldn't allow her.
Ari Fleischer, there used to be, with Helen Thomas, there has been forever. There was a tradition where, because she was the senior member of the White House press corps, she was allowed to ask the first question. Okay?
Right. I remember that tradition.
And she had an exchange with Ari Fleischer that he didn't like. She was, I think she was asking about,
I know what she was asking about.
Casualties in Iraq, was that what it was?
Well, I don't know about that. I do know, and I reported this, actually, it's right there on my website. If you go back to, I think, January of this year, she was actually asking about a report that George Bush, due to a cocaine conviction, or at least a cocaine charge, had to do community service, and that's why he didn't serve in the National Guard. And this is actually between her and Scott McClellan, and he went ballistic. He went all over the map. He wouldn't answer her questions. By the way, the text of that, which is very hard to find, is right there on my website. You can check it out maybe February of this year. Just do a search for Helen Thomas or McClellan, and you'll see an incredible exchange that I've quoted word for word on there. But actually, Helen Thomas, I think you're right, was in trouble with Ari Fleischer long before that exchange with Scott McClellan.
And you know, that, like, they don't even call on her most of the time anymore.
Well, the other thing I found was...
that's what happens, is that, you know, if you're friendly, your access continues. So and the only way you can be friendly is A, not to ask the tough questions, or B, you know, not to ask a soft question, get a lie, and then expose the lie. So if you expose the lie, your access is gone. Or if you ask the tough questions, your access is gone. So it's really a pact with the devil.
I remember the most recent press conference where a fairly young reporter, as they go, practically gulped out the nervous question, Mr. Bush, why do you have to have Vice President Cheney by your side when you testify before the 9/11 Commission? At which point Bush said, we think it's important to give information to the 9/11 Commission. Of course, not mentioning the fact that he opposed it from the beginning, and he
exactly.
resisted saying anything, and he said there's no cameras there, and no, you can't write it down, and of course he won't be under oath. All of that, of course, aside, Bush said, well, we're just trying to get information now. And this intrepid young reporter, again, he was practically gulping. I forget his first name, but I called him Nervous. He again said, Mr. President, my question is, why do you have to have Vice President Cheney by your side? At which point Bush responded, it's very important that we give information to the 9/11 Commission.
Same
yes,
way.
Next question. We have many questions here. Next question. And he went right on. I'd be surprised if he gets invited back.
You know what? That's something to follow up on. And you know what? I think it's a shame. I didn't know that story, but I think it's a shame that, you know, I don't know this guy's name and that you can't remember it, because these people should be commended, and
yes,
they should
absolutely.
Be publicly commended.
Absolutely. And frankly, I kept thinking, if I were in the room, I would shout it a third time. Mr. President, you refused to answer my question, right? I just shout it out. But that's the kind of person I am. That's why I will never be invited to a White House briefing.
Well, Mark, you know, I'm going to tell you something, though. I was in a press conference It's in my essay on my investigation of TWA 800. But at the FBI building, after Pierre Salinger had come out with this information about, you know, missile hitting the plane or something,
right.
They had this big conference, you know, at the FBI building. And, you know, they were checking in all the reporters and stuff. And then the FBI, the head of the task force, Jim Kallstrom, who's now in charge of Homeland Security for New York.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Didn't mean to laugh, but anyway.
Kind of scary, actually.
He was presiding over the press conference with Admiral Christensen, who'd been on the Normandy, which was a missile cruiser that was out there that night. But anyway, the first reporter raises his hand and says, "Well, I'd like to know, you know, why the Navy is in charge of, is involved in the recovery of the plane when the Navy is a possible suspect." And
wow.
And Kallstrom, his face turned bright red, and he points to the guy, and he says, "Remove him!"
Wow, really?
Two goons, FBI goons, come out and drag the guy out of the room.
Do we have footage of this?
You know, I don't know if there's footage.
I mean,
of that.
that's perfect for cameras. If I were him, I'd just shout out as they did in 1968. The whole world's watching. The whole world's watching.
Well, you have
that's an amazing story.
This is what I'm getting at with the White House press corps and what happened to Helen, et cetera, et cetera. There is an energy that comes from that action that nails you to your seat, and you're just paralyzed.
Wow.
And it's a you better behave or else sort of energy that everybody responds to by behaving.
Wow.
Okay.
Christina, we have to go to a commercial break. But when
okay.
we come back, I want to answer some calls. And folks,
okay.
I know that there's some people who called in and dropped off. All you have to do is call back 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can ask Christina your questions. And when we come back, we're going to give more specific examples of a press that is not really free. We'll be right back. This is an ad from Pig Farmers for Truth, which has, repeat, no direct ties to Mark Levine. My name is Marty Jones. I am a pig farmer. I swear that 33 years ago, I witnessed George W. Bush having carnal relations with a swine. I have signed an affidavit saying so. 33 years ago, George Bush attacked one of my sows. George Bush is a pig screwer. I know, because I was there. It does not matter that the act of carnal relations does not appear in documented records. The documented records say that Bush was actually drunk in a gutter in Alabama at the time. I'm here to tell you the documented records are false, and I will not stand to have my credibility or patriotism challenged. I am a pig farmer. I plan to appear on all the cable news shows. I expect newspapers to report my claims in full without questioning them. And neither the Kerry campaign nor Mark Levine has any connection to this ad, though I do hope to be appointed a federal judge by the Kerry administration, or at least ambassador to France. Mark Levine denies any direct collaboration with the makers of this ad. In fact, Mark Levine condemns any group paying for any ad that has not been directly approved by the president or John Kerry. Associates of Mark Levine, including the blog Atrios, may have had a role in the formation of this ad, but Mark refuses to disavow the ad. The pig farmer may be telling the truth. He has a right to tell his tale. Mark believes we should discuss other issues and not focus on what happened 33 years ago.
Going 100 miles per hour, but who forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober goes to Washington lobbyist Frank Keating. He's the former right-wing governor of Oklahoma who tried to get a top political job in the Bush regime, but ethical problems disqualified him. So Frank sank to a lower ethical strata, hiring on to hustle legislative favors for life insurance corporations. Appallingly, Frank recently stood up for several insurance firms that are engaged in a shabby insider deal to fleece young American soldiers who are on their way to war in Iraq. Often posing as military instructors in personal finance, insurance agents from these corporations have duped unwitting young troops into buying rip-off life insurance policies that are unneeded and nearly worthless. It's an abominable, totally unethical act of war profiteering. But here came Keating, the industry mouthpiece, to blame the victims. Someone who is mature enough to fight and quite possibly die for their country should be freely able to decide how much and what kind of life insurance they should have, he said. What a goober. He knows that this is not about free markets or free will. These low-ranking soldiers are set up for the insurance predators. The sales pitch often comes as part of compulsory military classes. The soldiers are not even told they're buying insurance, and many of the insurance agents are retired military officers. These 18, 19, 20-year-old soldiers, conditioned to obeying the commands of senior officers, believe that retired Colonel so-and-so is telling them something they must do, so they sign without questioning. This is Jim Hightower saying, yet Keating is still lobbying Congress to let his corporate clients continue picking the pockets of the underpaid grunts heading to Iraq. Is this the freedom they're being asked to die for? I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I apologize for that new ad. You never know about some of the advertisers here. But my guest is Christina Borgeson, and she is the editor of a book called Into the Buzzsaw, The Myth of a Free Press. And we're ready to take your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Christina Borgeson. Caller, you there?
Yes, I am. Mark, Phil down in Albuquerque.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
Just as fine as a rock laying in the warm sun. It's a beautiful day in Albuquerque.
Well, that's terrific. What's your comment or question for my guest?
I love the disingenuousness. It's about as straight as the twisted pig's tail in your little earlier tongue-in-cheek blurb.
Well, like I said, all those 527s really just shouldn't be around. It doesn't matter whether they're true or false. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. How are we disingenuous here, Phil?
There's a simple reality. Anybody who studied a little bit about politics and just step into the museum over Francis Tavern in New York, and you see the kind of stuff that's been said for centuries about people running for office, you folks are not sitting there, have never sat there, and whacked the punk out of the people who put absolutely ghastly, untrue ads on the air. George, the people supporting Bush, the 527s in favor of Bush or opposed to Kerry, whichever way you'd like to say it, are spending $51 for every dollar spent by the friends of Bush.
Phil, my point is simple. It matters whether an ad is true or false, and that's the only point of the ad. Let me see if you have a question for our guest. Do you disagree with her and with me that the media shouldn't be constrained in this way by the government and by self-censorship?
I don't think that the media is being constrained. If you
really
want to stick your head out and take a chance at getting a whack, you go out and tell the truth. Maybe you'll get smacked. So what? The media during Clinton's time got smacked.
So what?
Well, the media during Clinton's time, all right, did go into every detail about what every peccadillo he ever did. Remember Travelgate? Oh, no. Hillary Clinton may have disliked the travel agents the government used. That's
a
scandal.
Wait a second, though. So what? I mean, do you know the people in my book, do you know what they've put up with? They put up with death threats. They put up with being bankrupted. Yeah, why do? How can you say that? I mean, it's what I'm saying here is that it's bad for your career, it's bad for your health, and it's bad for your financial health to tell the truth in this country on the really important issues,
like whether we
frankly,
go to war or
even,
not.
You know, and I'm not talking about the Lewinsky issue or whether Bush took cocaine when he was a young guy. I mean, those things aren't really that important compared to some of the other issues that you never see on television or read about in the newspapers.
In a narrow thing that you said, Bush doing cocaine is not that important. It is not important.
But that's my point.
But Christina's point is that.
Phil,
wait a minute. Let's deal with the issue here. Christina says that the Bush administration put out falsehoods, known falsehoods about weapons of mass destruction, and that reporters who didn't report them were denied access to.
It's beyond even putting out known falsehoods. They actually used our tax dollars to create groups and offices and to pay, PR people to lie to us. A campaign of lying and deception to get us over to Iraq. It's worse than just the press not reporting. The press, to be honest, before I even wrote this introduction, I went out and I spoke to a bunch, 10 top reporters. I was working on a documentary. I spoke to people like Ted Koppel. I spoke to Tom Curley, the president and CEO of the Associated Press that reaches a billion people a day. I spoke to Helen Thomas. I spoke to Carl Bernstein. I spoke to Peter Jennings as executive producer. I spoke to a lot. And none of them really knew what hit them.
You're talking about with the
warning
rock?
In my introduction, I write about, the White House Information Group, the Office of Special Plans, the Office of Strategic Influence, which didn't last very long because it was, an incredibly obnoxious mission.
Christina, most of my listeners have never heard of these groups.
Just to lie to the American people about going over to war where we're losing, our young boys. They're dying out there.
Christina.
You don't think that's important?
Well, do I think that anybody being murdered is important? You betcha.
Phil, do you think we should get the truth prior to going to war?
Yeah, don't you think we should have been told the truth before going to war?
What truth?
Which
truth? The one that we heard from Ted Kennedy in 2000, from the Clintons and Gores, who told us the truth as they believed it really was.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Clinton and Gore didn't.
They didn't say that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They didn't say that in 98.
So let me give you an example from Christina's book, if I could.
I don't advocate Clinton and Gore lying to the public either.
I mean, to be
perfectly honest, I think what Clinton did in terms of lying to the public, even about Lewinsky, was just shameful. It was horrible for the Oval Office. It robbed the entire office and our nation of its dignity. But don't just because you say this about Bush, I'm going to say this about Clinton. It's all ugly, and that's what you have to understand. Why are you being partisan about it? Don't you just want the truth?
I do. And
whether it's about Clinton or Bush?
I do, and I agree with you that in exactly what you've just said, that all of this is ugly. And when I said
Phil, let me read, if I could, both of you. I want to read, Christina, hold on. I want to read an example from your book, because I thought this was really very interesting. You have George Bush standing next to Britain's Prime Minister, Tony Blair. And this is a direct quote from Bush. The point that I would emphasize to you is that the threat from Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, potentially nuclear weapons capability, that threat is real. We only need to look at the report from the International Atomic Agency this morning showing what has been going on at the former nuclear weapons sites to realize that. Excuse me, that was Blair. Then Bush said, quote, we just heard the Prime Minister talk about the new report. I would remind you when the inspectors first went into Iraq, they were denied access. A report came out of the IAEA saying they were 6 months away from developing a weapon. I don't know what more evidence we need, unquote. That's a direct statement. It's a statement that the International Atomic Energy Association finds that Iraq is 6 months away from nuclear weapons.
And that's not what the report said at all.
As Christina points out, exactly. That is exactly not what the report said.
Exactly the opposite.
So this is a direct lie by the administration that I would think that a reporter would bring out. But tell us what happened, Christina, when a reporter tried to report on it.
Well, essentially what happened was that two reporters apparently, maybe there were others, but I'm aware of two only really who picked it up. One was a reporter for the Washington Times, and he basically put it, you know, they put it in the back pages. And one was NBC's Robert Windrum. And Windrum reported that, you know, he said Bush misstated. There was a report, and the White House came out that evening and said, oh, well, you know, this report, we interpreted this report the way we interpreted it, you know. It was just our interpretation. But, you know, Windrum had reported that, you know, it was exactly the report actually stated exactly the opposite. Well, that report,
in fact, the report
went
said,
on NBC's website, yep. MSNBC, and it was pulled off in 2 seconds flat, got no traction whatsoever. Okay, and then the next week, Bush goes on the radio and says exactly the same lie.
Again,
okay?
Bush
now,
says
again,
that yeah,
again,
Iraq. Can
it's
get...
not about Bush. Happens to be the president right now. He happens to be involved in very extreme activities nationally and internationally on behalf of our nation. If Clinton were in power, I don't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican, and this is something I really want your listeners to understand. I don't care what the politics of the person is. What I care about is whether they're telling the truth. And if they're lying, particularly if that lie ends up results in the deaths of a lot of people, of a lot of American citizens, then we have to say something about it. And hopefully the nation will do something about it. And again, if it were Clinton doing this stuff, he'd feel, you know, he should feel the heat too. It doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat. And that's what American people need to understand.
Phil?
Our leaders should not be allowed to lie to us.
Go ahead, Phil.
Christina, I agree with you. And I promise you, I agree and support you in what you're saying. I don't think the reporters are some sacred person that should be elevated above the rest. At the same time, I believe that those who choose your profession should be treated with the respect that they've earned. I do want the truth.
You want me to tell you something?
I'm not a Vietnam vet. I'm Vietnam era. I lived through the lies that were perpetuated by several different administrations that resulted in the deaths unnecessary of friends of mine, and all of the traction that came down from that, and in part where we are today.
But Phil, I want you to understand the specifics of what happened here. I think it's very important. And this is just one specific example that's in the book. Bush said Iraq was 6 months away from making nuclear weapons. He claimed there was an IAEA, an international agency report on that. It turns out it wasn't in the report. In fact, the report said, quote, based on all credible information available to date, the IAEA has found no indication of Iraq having achieved its program goal of producing nuclear weapons, unquote. So that's not what the report said.
And actually, Powell had said it a couple years earlier.
They lied.
A few years earlier.
They lied about it, and then the reporters that tried to report it, they got knocked off the air. And that's what she's trying to talk about.
Look, Phil.
And then I have to get to another caller that's hanging on. Last word with Phil.
Okay. You know what? I urge you, because I sense that you're a genuine person. You know, I sense that. On October 1st, the paperback version of Into the Buzzsaw is coming out. I want you to please read the book. I think it's going to be like $14. You can get it even cheaper on Amazon, okay? Get the book, and then email me at fklb@aol.com, and tell me what you think, because, you know, we don't have time to cover the scope, the huge scope of you know, areas of reporting that affect our entire society, okay, and in matters of life and death that cannot be covered.
Phil, I want to thank
Christina,
you for your call.
And I appreciate what you're doing.
Real quick, Phil.
And I will go read your book.
Terrific. Terrific. Thanks, and call
always
again, Phil.
One.
I appreciate it. Call back. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Christina Borgeson. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hi, Mark. This is Brian from New Jersey.
Hi, Brian from New Jersey. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that I think freedom of speech exists. I think the problem is that you really have to look for the sources where you can find something that not only is credible, but that has substance. TV news is, it's not news. It's based for commercials. It's all for money. So they're going to throw whatever they can in a 30 or 60 second spot to make them cash, and they don't care about political things. As far as Bush not answering questions or Cheney not answering questions, well, there's really nothing we can do about that other than vote them out for these, you know, ways of getting around the questions. But, yeah, that's basically my comment, that TV news isn't news, and most of the newspapers aren't news. You have to, really have to look for the independent news sources for your freedom of speech.
And where do you look? And I want to ask Christina the same question. Brian, where do you look for independent news?
I scour the Internet for BBC News. I go to your website for links. I go to Infowars.com. I read the Sierra Club newsletter. Just a bunch of different sources rather than just opening up my Philadelphia Inquirer or turning on CNN, because that's extremely biased. Whereas I look at 5, 6, 7, God, sometimes 10 newspapers for the same article to get all the different viewpoints on it. So I'm not just listening to one person's rhetoric.
And I want to ask Christina as well. Christina, a number of people have already commented on the blog. I got 7 or 8. I haven't read them all yet. But a number of them are asking the same question, and that is, where do you, Christina Borgeson, recommend that someone go to get independent news, to get truth, to get things that are not propaganda?
Well, you know, again, it's interesting. On very sensitive subjects, that are sensitive to our government and our large institutions and our corporations, actually the foreign news is better. BBC, for example, there's a site for what's going on in Iraq. There's a site called Asia Times Online that is amazing. Their reporting is really, really good. Again, I read French newspapers, Spanish newspapers, and online. And also the Brits, you know, The Guardian, which is sort of leftist, but, you know, it's great reporting. The Economist, which is to the right, which is a magazine, also great reporting. Unfortunately, and for, you know, good reporting here in the United States, there's, what's Chuck Lewis's, what's his thing called again? The Center for Public Integrity?
Yeah, that's good. There's also Salon.com, I think, has some very interesting articles.
But the Center for Public Integrity does amazing stuff, and the reason why they do amazing stuff is because they actually have access to an international consortium of investigative journalists. So really big, you know, bottom line issues, they are fantastic, and they're great on reporting on the election, where the money's going. They're really big on following the money, which, of course, you know, is investigative reporting 101.
Anything else, Brian?
How about visittheonion.com? It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is good for parody. Thanks very much for your call.
You know, by the way, I want to make a comment about that, what he said, which is, most Americans work very hard all day long. My question is, why do they have to come home and turn on the news and not get decent news?
Yeah.
Why do they have to make getting the truth a research project?
Scouring,
and they don't
the
have the time, or they're too tired to do it?
It's a good point.
You know?
A fair point. Let me just ask you one more thing about the BBC, then we have to go to one more commercial break.
Okay.
And I, for one, will praise them. I remember after what happened in Florida, and I studied that very closely, as my listeners know. That's kind of my bête noire and my expertise at the same time. And the only thing I was getting on, for example, the intentional disenfranchising of black voters was from the BBC, was from The Guardian, was from British news sources. So I know they can be very accurate. But I'm going to ask you a devil's advocate question. How would you answer those that say, Christina, what about the BBC? They were just accused of getting everything wrong with Iraq, and there's this whole investigation in Britain that seemed to find them wrong. What do you know about that?
Well, look, this is the way every news outlet is. Every once in a while, you know, there's no perfect news outlet. The BBC has consistently, although, yeah, sure, it stumbled in this case and it will stumble again in the future, has consistently done pretty good work. And as I say, for what's going on in Iraq and the Middle East, I like to hear from the people who are actually on the ground.
Yep.
Okay, and actually people who speak the language, et cetera.
Yep.
And that's why for that reporting, that particular reporting, my best recommendation is Asia Times Online.
Okay, and I got to pat myself on the back just once. If you go back and look at my program, I did a wonderful show. It's still on my archive with Michael Rubin. Michael Rubin was the only member of the Coalition Provisional Authority, the people who are running Iraq.
Yes.
He's the only one that left the Green Zone, left safety, really risked his life to find out what was really going on, and he did some incredible reporting, and he came on my show, and if you want to know what's really going on in the ground in Iraq, I suggest you take a look at that archive. We have to go to one more commercial break. The number, if you want to call in, is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I'm drowning in blog entries, which is a good thing, not a bad thing. I'll be reading some of those, too, when we come back.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to people in the news who've got their tongues moving 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today, I've got a network of goobers for you, the honchos of NBC, CBS, and ABC. These conglomerate media barons have decreed that this year's national political conventions are worthy of only 1 hour of primetime coverage and only 3 nights of each convention. These conventions will produce the next president, who will decide everything from war to taxation. Yet the corporate arbiters of our public airwaves deem it more important to rebroadcast reruns of sitcoms than to cover our nation's quadrennial rituals of democracy. The honchos say that the conventions are scripted events that are not, quote, something we need to cover on the broadcast television network, as ABC News president so regally put it. Even news icon Dan Rather of CBS, who has fought in the past for more airtime for convention coverage, now refers to them as a, quote, money-raising lobbyist hunting ground infomercial. Well, yes, what takes place inside the hall is a parade of pontification and posturing. But why not go outside the hall, where two huge stories of national importance are playing out? First is that very lobbyist hunting ground that Rather decries. It would be great TV to have investigative reporters poke their cameras into the exclusive watering holes where corporate lobbyists are schmoozing with top elected officials and blatantly buying our government. Second is the astonishing police crackdown against ordinary citizens who dare to protest at these conventions. Like a third world dictatorship, our government now routinely uses massive and abusive force to shut down democratic expression, and it's time for the media to expose it. This is Jim Hightower saying, there's breaking news right in front of these media gooberheads. If only they had the journalistic gumption and integrity to cover it.
Buy Goodfellas on DVD today. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times calls it the best mob movie ever.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The masterpiece by Martin Scorsese, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, is on a 2-disc special edition DVD.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
Loaded with bonus features, including director commentary, documentaries, and more.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Goodfellas, buy it today on DVD. Rated R.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We've got just a few minutes left with our guest, Christina Borgerson. She's the editor of a book that you can get the hardcover out now, right, Christina? It's called Into the Buzzsaw, The Myth of a Free Press. You can get the hardcover now, right, Christina?
Yeah, you can get the hardcover.
On Amazon. And the softback.
The softcover is coming out October 1st, and it's a new edition. It has a bunch of new chapters.
Okay.
And it has very big teeth.
And this is in bookstores and Amazon.com, right?
That's right.
Okay, let me read. I've gotten a lot of comments on the blog, and I want to read some of them to you. Some are comments, some are questions. We'll just go through
okay.
them. Fred in New York City says, hey, isn't it funny how many commercials CNN runs from energy corporations in Saudi Arabia? It's a good thing there are no conflicts of interest there. Rick from Minnesota wants to know if you think there should be some regulations in what networks claim as news and entertainment. Do you think they should be better regulated? Is that the solution here?
Well, obviously, regulation is not working. You know, I mean, we do have the Federal Communications Commission, and their job is supposed to be to regulate the networks. And, by the way, there were public interest laws which mandated that networks serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity by providing. I mean, these have been laws and regulations on the books forever, and it hasn't happened because Michael Powell, as he said,
right.
I interpret the public interest to be what the public is interested in, which he means I guess soap operas and The Sopranos. I happen to love The Sopranos too, but I think when really, really important things are happening in the world and in our government, we need to know about it, and it needs to be reported in depth, in context, okay, and not from some, corporate agenda perspective. I think corporations have a right to, run successful businesses. And this is a problem because the corporate mandate to serve the shareholders and make a ton of money conflicts now to the point of, to the detriment of our entire society so greatly with the public interest mandate to inform the public properly that it's just not a workable paradigm anymore.
Well, the interesting thing is, the public interest is what the public is interested in. So if the public is interested in lies, we'll just give them lies. That's fine.
Rena Golden, who's head of CNN International News and stuff, was saying after 9/11, when people should have been asking the tough questions, she said the public was feeling very patriotic,
right,
and wanted to be very solid with the government. So all the news, picking up on what the audience wanted, there were no tough questions asked.
I must be a strange person. I was also very patriotic after 9/11. I put an American flag outside my window, I'll have you know, and flew it for a year until September 11th, 2002. But at the same time, as I very much cared about the people that were killed and wanted very much to fight the terrorists that killed us, I also wanted to know the truth from our government and from our media. And it's amazing to me, this idea that to be a true patriotic American, you have to want to be lied to. Like the people, some of them on my blog, that were criticizing John Kerry for telling the truth about atrocities in Vietnam, that were criticizing the people in Abu Ghraib for telling the truth about tortures there. It's, no, don't tell the truth about bad things we do. That helps the enemy. To me, the idea that the press would not tell the truth for any reason is scandalous.
Well, I mean, but the point that I was making is that you have to understand that CNN News doesn't view its audience as, citizens of America that need to be informed. They view them as consumer units. But,
And aren't they better than the other ones?
People who want to wear this veil of ignorance. I have to tell you something. I saw Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yeah.
And remember the woman, is it Lila Lipscomb, is that it, who lost her son?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she received. Now, that segment to me was so powerful.
I thought so too.
And I'll tell you why it struck me between the eyes. Because this woman, her family had served in the military nobly, honorably, and, she puts her American
right.
flag out there every day, and she didn't want to hear it about what was, the Iraq War
right.
and the
right.
questionable reasons for going, et cetera. She
Not
didn't want to hear
her son
any of
died.
That. Her son, who was in the military, he goes over there, and he dies, and
right.
okay, fine, he served, she's heartbroken, this and that, but, still she's fine. Not fine, but anyway,
she's still supporting the president.
Letter from her son saying, this war is wrong, I don't know what we're doing over here, and he was basically saying, when she realized that her son's life had been taken away
yeah.
for this specious reason,
yeah.
the woman, you just saw, the life
the epiphany
sucked out of her,
yeah, it just,
and the
totally,
veil of ignorance
right.
lifted, and I thought to myself, because, that's what I'm trying to do with this book, and when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, that's what I'm up against, People who just, they don't understand that life and death is involved here.
Yeah, it all has to do, to me, what John Kerry, I thought those incredible words he said 33 years ago, how can you ask a man to be the last to die for a mistake? How can we know
yeah.
if a war is a mistake or not unless we challenge our government. And let me say, folks, you know where I stand. My listeners know I want John Kerry to be elected. But I plan to challenge the Kerry administration, which I hope will be the next administration, just as much to get the truth out.
Absolutely.
It's the role of a journalist, it seems to me, is to tell people the truth no matter where it comes from. And that's why I think, by the way, these Swift Boat ads are so horrendous, because they're false, not because they're paid for by, I mean, sure, the president's behind it, and that's bad. But what's really bad, the reason he should disavow it, is because they are false.
Right.
And I think we have an obligation to tell the truth.
Yeah, one other thing, shouldn't put out anything that's false either. You understand? Absolutely right. These are not nonpartisan issues. And by the way, for the American people, and that's why I got into it with Phil, you know, the American people in general, I think, are really tired of the lying, cheating, and stealing. Okay? They're tired of being ripped off by, you know, ripped off by companies, ripped off, you know, lied to by their government, et cetera. And this is not a partisan issue. This is an American issue.
It is.
Okay? It's not right or left.
Christina, we only have a few minutes left. A couple things I want to point out, and I'll read a few more blog entries. One is that some people, whenever I hear this talked about regulation, they say, well, there's the fairness doctrine. That is the old doctrine that used to be in the law that said if you say one thing on one party side, Democrat or whatever, you have to give the other side, Republican. Most people don't realize that Ronald Reagan got rid of the fairness doctrine in 1987. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yep.
Let me read just a few more blog entries because we only got a couple minutes left. Rick from Minnesota writes, I love Dan, I assume meaning Dan Rather. I've been watching him forever. He has my deepest respect as a news person. I think because the press is being forced to bow to the people in power, it has given the government a license to lie. Without the press, there are no consequences to lying. The government is free to go unchallenged in the things they say and do. We need to protect and promote a free press by fighting against media consolidation. Comment by Nathan, who said, quote, no way you gave out your email on air, unquote. I'll just let that go. Bert writes where you can get your hardcover book. Steve writes where he gets his news at www.democracynow.org. And Brian writes, Christina is right. People shouldn't have to work hard to get their news. Unfortunately, right now, until the American television news media cares more about the issues and less about the money from commercials, maybe we'll get some substance. Neil Postman and Steve Powers wrote an incredible book called How to Watch TV News. It reveals all too much about how the networks decide what is news and what isn't. Christina, this hour flew by very fast. Give us one last indication of how we can buy your book.
It's the October 1 release, it'll be in bookstores all over the country. If you want to get the hardback, it's on Amazon.com, or you can go to my website, intothebuzzsaw.com, and it's linked to Amazon.
And the neat thing about her book, folks, is this isn't just Christina Borgeson and her wisdom saying what she heard. What you find in the book is actual journalists, people like Dan Rather's Chapter 1, right?
Yes.
So the actual journalists are saying how it is that they are being censored. And really, this is the kind of thing that you're almost certainly not going to see on the evening news.
No.
So I, by definition. So I really want to recommend the book. And read one last comment by Rick from Minnesota. Says, I really like what Mrs. Borgeson has to say. Her book sounds like it would be a great read. I look forward to reading it. And I want to thank you very much, Christina, for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
My pleasure.
That's it for The Inside Scoop today. There will be no show tomorrow. Sorry, folks. Summer vacation, call it that. But next week, we're going to be doing the Republican National Convention, hopefully with the same insight and challenge that we did the Democratic National Convention. As always, we welcome your calls. We welcome your participation. And let me close by saying something that John Kerry said 33 years ago. Don't love your country right or wrong. That's like loving your mother, drunk or sober. Love your country when it is right, and when it is wrong, put it right. This is Mark Levine signing off.